Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary. Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, before we get the show started, I wanted to let you know we are giving away a bunch of brand new Black Magic gear.
Yeah, cameras, switchers, DaVinci Resolve licenses, a bunch of awesome stuff. So stay tuned to learn how you can enter to win free gear from Black Magic, and we're going to tell you all about it later on in this episode. Now cue the music.
Hey guys, Oren here. Before we start the episode, I just wanted to mention real quick that we are doing our live show on January 10th. We have awesome guests. We have Melissa Hunter, who is a TV writer, and we have Matt Barber, who directs a ton of TV shows. I just visited him on the set of Lethal Weapon, actually, which was really fun. And they're all going to be there talking about how we're going to get our TV careers going in 2018. If you'd like to know more information about the live show, go to justshootitpod.com/live show. And we'll have the ticket info there. I think we might be on the verge of running out of tickets, but there is a wait list, and we are very optimistic about letting people in off the wait list. So go check it out and let us know what you think. And without any further ado, here is the next episode of Just Shoot It.
Hey, welcome to the 92nd episode of Just Shoot It, a podcast about filmmaking, storytelling, and directing. I'm Matt Enlow.
And I'm Oren Kaplan. And today we are listening to the second half of our interview with Brad Peyton. This time he'll really dig deep on his Netflix show Frontier and how that all worked out. And we'll hear more tidbits about directing freaking $100 million movies.
Pretty dope.
It's a really fun interview. Please let us know what you think of it. Also, let us know what you think of our show. Leave us an iTunes review. We would love you forever and be your best friends and, you know, give you feedback on your reels if you're interested in something like that. We'll even meet you at a coffee shop, potentially.
Stranger things have happened. I cannot wait to dive into the finale of this conversation with Brad Peyton. But before, there's just one thing I have to ask, Oren. What have you been working on lately?
Well, it's funny you ask because I have my first drone gig this Friday.
What?
Yeah.
Breaking news, everybody. I had no idea.
I know. So to regular listeners, you'll know that I just purchased a drone recently and I have been having way too much fun with it. And
it has been pretty fun.
Yeah. Matt and I took it to the river. But I have some friends that are shooting some golf stuff and they want just like really cool shots of like a golf swing, you know, like the camera flying towards the golfer and as he hits the swing, like flying as if it's the ball, aerials, like just straight down shots of, you know, the golfer so we can look see his form and with all sorts of graphics and then just B-roll.
Who is this for? Is this
for Sawhorse? Golf Digest magazine. Yeah, Sawhorse.
Oh,
Condé Nast.
That's going to be fun, dude.
Yeah. So Friday morning, I'm shooting it. I'll let you know how it goes. I was telling the director today, I was like, so do you need me to like fly into a golf hole because that is going to be difficult. There's these things that I can do really well. I've been getting better. I can fly in a straight line. I can go up and down really fast. But tilting the camera up and down, I can do it. But it's hard for me to hit an exact point without the camera.
Right. Like a small, like a hole in one would be pretty pretty rough.
And panning is a little tricky as well. But yeah.
You're paying this thing off already. That is great. That's awesome, man. Flying that drone is super fun. We'll have to do it again sometime soon. So speaking of crazy aerial shots, let's talk to the director of San Andreas.
And Rampage.
And Rampage. And a bunch of other cool stuff.
And Netflix's Frontier, available now.
Brad Peyton.
So, okay, so you're doing these scenes where gigantic buildings are falling down, and then you need to shoot like a scene between two people at a restaurant, like having a conversation.
Yeah.
Like, how do you approach like shot listing that so that it feels like it fits like the with the rest of the movie.
Yeah.
Like, do you don't, do you ever do like a two shot and two overs, and then you're like, that's the scene. Like,
yeah, of course. Yeah, like you have to shoot whatever's appropriate to the scene. You know, like for me, I think of it as like I'm a story guy. Like that's what I like when I go to see movies. All I really want to see is a great story, because what comes with a great story, generally speaking, with high end filmmakers, are really great visuals, really good acting. So, because it tells a really good story. And so for me with camera work, it's like, what is this scene about? You know, like, what are we really trying to tell here? Like, what is the point of this? I've gotten in arguments with producers where they're like, just shoot standard coverage. And I'll like, I've gotten mad because I'm like, go hire anybody can shoot standard coverage. Like, I'm not here to shoot standard coverage. I've shot standard coverage and you do, but you're trying to do everything in a way that it's not standard coverage. Everything you're trying to make special on some level. However, some things just are meant to be two people sitting at a table talking, and I still commit as much thought and energy to that as I do to a big oneer, because otherwise your story is flawed, your movie is flawed, and you're trying to like limit the flaws, and they're going to be flaws, but you're trying to limit them to a very small number. And the only way that a filmmaker has the ability to do that is to be as specific about their inserts as they are about their masters, as they are about their close-ups, as they are about everything, you know, like every design shot, everything. You have to be that way if you really give a shit. So, you know, it's kind of like what's appropriate to the scene. And that process, and even like when I shoot television, the process for me is instinctual. Like I sketch ideas, you know, and now I'm at the point where I see an idea and I go, oh yeah, that's an A camera and this is a B camera and I can do this like that. You know, like I understand how it clicks together more because I've just done it more, but I wish I could be like what I see with a lot of, other feature and television directors where that you can just tell they've done it so much. They have, you know, like, well, A, B camera for sure. Like this, right? I'm like, not that guy. And it's probably great for my feature career and maybe not so great for my television career, but it has yielded results in my very small TV career. But it's because I don't think of it as like you're saying, standard coverage. I go through a script and I see shots, I see moments, and I'm like, what can I do to capture that moment that way? And what's hard about, I think, the television world versus the feature world is that in the feature world, you're afforded the ability to try to make every beat special,
sure. Yeah.
You know, and you're like, because there is no other episode they ever have to worry about. This is it, you know? And so the onus is on you to make everything as special as you can possibly make it and as epic as you can possibly make it. And in the television world, it's like, tell the story, you know, get great actors. And I have a really hard time like, well, no, but I just picture it this way. You know, this moment should be this moment. So you're trying to balance that a little bit. But I have a terrible knack of like just I read a script and I picture it and I sketch the ideas and I do like a little bit of coverage notes, you know, like, oh yeah, if this is this shot, then we're going to probably cut from here to here. Cause I've just done it enough now.
When you say sketch the ideas, you mean like you draw a little,
yeah, I draw thumbnails sketches. Right in the script, you know, like I just kind of like just print up the script, usually read a hard copy. I usually read it once on my iPad and I have an iAnnotate program where I can just kind of like drop in notes. Mm-hmm. And that's usually where I'm still working with the writer or a co-writer and going through and saying, this is what I think we should do. And then, but to get really like, to get really ready to shoot, I'll sometimes have to like just put the director eye to it and go like, hey, how would this actually play out? And then the notes get really specific. Cause I'm like, I'm going to be in a master here. I'm going to be in a close up here. I'm going to do an insert here. Like this.
So you're editing it in your head before you're on set.
100%.
And are you worried about transitions from scene to scene and all that stuff?
100%. I'm worried about everything. I'm like,
are you thinking about wardrobe, like those 100% types of things?
All of it. I sketch characters. I do all of it. I do all that stuff. It's my favorite part. My two favorite parts are designing and editing.
Being on set is like, there's something pretty amazing, right? You're like the general of like an army, right?
And I don't have those thoughts. I have the like, holy God, how are we going to get today?
So let's transition over to TV for a second. So you have a show on Netflix.
Yep.
Frontier. It's now it's second season.
It is. We start shooting our third season in January.
Oh, awesome. Congrats.
Yeah, thank you.
And so did you direct the pilot?
I directed the first two episodes of season one and the first episode of season two.
Oh, great.
It's Netflix, so everything was like written before you guys started shooting, and right? Or is it not?
No.
Not like that for your show? Like, it's not like network TV, right? Where
it's like everything
is going in parallel.
No. I'm like probably the worst director to talk to about network television because I actually have never worked in network television. So I'm not very versed in the system. I don't really know how the system works for network television. But our process was, here's what's interesting is that Netflix is open to different processes. They're actually really interested in different processes. And, you know, I'm talking to them about ongoing other projects. And what I'm really excited by with my relationships at Netflix is they're intrigued by things that they just haven't done or seen before. Mm-hmm. And that's exciting. And so the way our show came together was we had a pilot. And they said, we like this. And luckily, San Andreas had opened up the weekend before my meeting. So that was
sure. Good. Wait, and you had already shot a pilot?
No. We had a pilot script. Oh, okay. We'd written a script. And they said, do you have a second script? And I said, yeah, but it's not as good. So I need some time to work on it. And they said, well, if you can get the second script as good as you do, these are our notes, which again, Netflix is amazing with notes where they just like four notes and they're like really broad. So you get a sense of the show they want to see, but they're not going to be like, this character should be like in this scene should really wear whatever or have a fork, not a knife. And you're like, okay. Whatever.
And what did they like about Frontier?
So my pitch to them, and beyond being the guy who just did San Andreas, my thing was that you'd never seen this period this way in a TV show or a film. And so if you look up the 1774 or whatever, 1772 when it takes place, and you look up movies, the only movies that you will find about that time period are all upper crust, you know, royalty, the Duchess. And I went through and I watched them all trying to find blue collar people, like the working class. And the Duchess, I found two shots because I was just like, what does it look like? Just visually, what does it look like? I couldn't find anything. So I was like, okay, I'm interested because I haven't seen this. And then when the closest thing you could find was Last of the Mohicans, which was like 25 years later, I think. And I was like, okay, that's the closest thing that exists. And that's a hell of a movie. Now we can't pull off Last of the Mohicans, but we can explore this time period. And I've never seen it done.
When's The Revenant? Is that 1800s?
The Revenant was, so this is interesting.
So The Revenant hadn't come out when you were pitching this.
The Revenant, right? I didn't even know what The Revenant was until we were shooting. So I was like, now the interesting thing about Frontier is that we shot the first two episodes because those are the scripts that were done. And then we had a Christmas break and where we wrote the last four of season one.
Okay.
So we kind of like tested.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's fun.
We tested the first two to see what really worked. And like, I was the guinea pig, so it was terrible. Like, I was like, you guys can't do more fights at night with 45 people. Like,
because you had to shoot like an episode in 8 days or something, or what?
Seven days an episode, yeah. You know? And I had a fight with like...
Sure. You're used to rehearsing for five, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, I was like, yeah, literally like, well, I mean, like any schedule would go, okay, you're shooting at night and you have a fight with, realistically it was like 24 people in a fight at night, you know, with Momoa and a bunch of his crew.
Yeah.
And so in that night, we shot that scene, sneaking up to the house scene, spying on the house, moving into the house, going into the shed, rescuing the kid, carrying him out, then the fight, then the escape. And like, that's insane.
In one night.
In one night in Canada in January in Newfoundland in the woods. And you're like, this is all insane. This is all not like obviously The Revenant is amazing. Go look at how many days they shot it.
Right.
They shot part of it in like Argentina or something because they ran out of snow. Where they were
and they
shooting
also,
originally.
They also did like a bunch of those wonders. They rehearsed them for like 5 days.
Right.
They rehearsed the shot for 5 days. I almost
like
shot an
San
entire
Andreas.
Episode. Well, no, I let my camera operator go, and he rehearsed what I designed. I kept shooting.
Oh, okay. Sure.
They just stopped down and rehearsed for 5 days. Like, no, let's just figure the shot out for 5 days. We shot the episode in 7.
Right.
So it's like, there's no fair comparison here. Like, it's just totally different things, you know? But so it was like super challenging to do. But the key for me was just like, you haven't seen this. Now, what's amazing about television that I'd never experienced before was this like growing process where, you know, you start in episode 1, and by the time I'd done the first 2 episodes, I was like, oh my God, no, you can't send any other director. This is never going to happen.
Right.
Like, I'm going to be the most experienced director that we have on the show. And like, this was bananas, guys.
And you're a producer on it.
Yeah.
But not a showrunner.
No, not a showrunner. But I sort of assimilated into the showrunner or co-showrunner with the creators.
Well, you created the look, obviously, kind of the language, the cinematic language of how the show is shot, the tone.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I was the visualist, basically. You know, like I was the person kind of designing the costumes with the costume designer and talking to the DP about the lighting. My only regret on that is I don't think some creative partners of mine on the show realized how extreme I wanted to go, because I would say it to them and they would nod and say yes. And then later would be like, oh no, we can't go, like, that can't be that dark. And I'm like, no, it has to be that dark. Like, and then there'd be like debates on it. So season 2 really kind of like became what the show was ultimately supposed to be, which is very small nudges in different directions. But I'd never experienced this thing where it's like, oh, you can develop a show, you know, like season 1 and season 2, there's some pretty substantial leaps in like things like writing and lighting, things that where you were like, oh, we should go more real and the story should be a little bit more like this. You had that opportunity to kind of grow.
Right. Yeah. Like, you can iterate a little bit too. Right?
And feedback for ourselves.
Yeah.
Like, we were doing it and then talking honestly to each other about like what could be better. And again, you know, we're making this show in the middle of nowhere. It's a very challenging show to make, and everyone's like having to pick their game up to do it, myself included. And so it's like, it's kind of like you're just slowly climbing this mountain and trying to get better as you have like less and less oxygen, you know. Like, so it was great to be able to do 6 episodes, stop down, look at it, have honest conversations, and then go back and do season 2. And we did the same thing with season 3. We kind of stopped down and said, okay, what's really good? What's really not?
You know. And do you care, like, what you do, you go online and see what characters people like and like what people are responding to?
Between seasons? You hear about it, even if you don't read it, you hear from other people. But honestly, like, I could make up my own mind on that stuff. I mean, I trust my own instincts with that stuff. And I'm okay with disagreeing with the general public, but generally speaking, I don't. I mean, I learned on Journey 2 that you have to be happy with your movie. And if you're happy with it, then you can kind of be okay with everything else. You know, like, then it's all okay because you're happy with it. There's no other... Like,
some people aren't going to like it, and who cares?
What are you going to do?
Yeah.
You're like, what are
the
you going to do?
The movie is the movie.
Yeah, and you've made what you like, you know? And so I think I'm the style of filmmaker and storyteller I am because how I grew up and because I'm making stuff that I like, and it just happens to be that the general populace likes the same sort of stuff I like, you know? That's where I'm lucky, you know? And I learned that again on Cats and Dogs 2 and Journey 2. I was like, no, I have to be who I am and do my own thing. So I read criticism. I hear about criticism. I don't take it as gospel. I'm like, no, this isn't a point of view and an opinion. And it's just kind of like, the thing that no one realizes is how much time you had or how much money you had.
Right.
They all judge everything the same way, you know, which I don't think is fair, but that's the world we live in. And I'm, you know, like that. So when someone's just like, well, it's, you know, it's not The Revenant. And I'm like, yeah, no kidding. You know, like there's no comparison between these two things.
Yeah, but The Revenant is not a TV show. It's like a long, each shot could be a TV show.
I'm also like, go look up the budget for The Revenant. And like, look at our budget and look how much story we have to tell,
right.
You know, like, it's just, I don't do these things because it's like ridiculous, but like, you, people say ridiculous things like it's fact.
Sure.
Like, you know, like they're like, oh yeah. Like they're comparing apples and oranges in the most extreme way and saying it to you in this tone of just like, that's what it is. And you're like, dude, you know, clearly sure. don't really know what you're talking about. And sometimes that stuff is like tossed at you as like, here's fact. And you're right. like, so you right. just kind of take a little bit of it in and, you know, I'm more interested in like creative stuff that applies to it. And again, like,
right. But if people like, I mean, you hear about Breaking Bad, like Jesse was supposed to be gone after like the second episode. And in Girls, Zasha Mamet's character was only supposed to be in the pilot, but they like started working with them and they like loved the character so much right. that they were like, I guess maybe it was the filmmakers themselves that loved them. They kept them. Yeah. And maybe 100%. It wasn't like feedback from viewers.
Well, I think that like when you're a confident filmmaker, you're seeing those. I mean, to me, that's like you see the opportunity and you're like, oh man, we got to like, this person's mm-hmm. awesome.
Let's keep them around.
Let's keep this person around. Or like, oh God, killing this person is going to be terrible. We scripted them to be killed, but like maybe they can be twin brother.
right. Well, so maybe we can just finish this conversation. It's been really fascinating.
Yeah, it's too good. Yeah.
But to kind of bring it back down to, you know, a lot of our listeners who are kind of like at the place where they're like, want to move to Hollywood, want to get into this, but are intimidated or afraid. Like, you know, if you were talking to like your young self, like the one that just dropped out of film school, what advice would you give? Yeah. And anything for kind of new filmmakers?
What advice would I give? Well, I mean, I don't necessarily think you need to move to Hollywood to be a filmmaker. Not necessarily. I failed a lot in private in Canada, you know, mm-hmm. before I came to LA and failed publicly. But, you know, like, I think we're in more of a world where, you know, you don't necessarily have to conform as much. You know, I think you can.
It almost seems like we're right now in a very much in a time where the less you are like everyone else, the better. You know, like a show like Transparent doesn't get sold 10 years ago.
No.
Right?
Right. Well, right now, television is really amazing because, you know, I was just thinking about this the other day. We call them libraries, like Netflix's library of shows. Mm-hmm. And it really is like a library. Like shows are like novels or chapters in a novel, and a season is a novel. And really, like, television is that has become this thing where it's like going to the, for me, as I guess I'm old as the fucking hills, it's like going to the library and getting a book. It's like you can go in and go, I want this tone and this subject matter. Like mm-hmm. everything exists now, you know, as where it seemed. Like, I think back when I was a kid and think about, like, what came out at 8 o'clock on a Thursday night or a Tuesday or Wednesday, and it's sort of all the same. Like, it was a little more homogenous, you know? So now it's like you can make a show about, the more unique the show is, in a lot of ways, the better chance it has. But, it, you know, so it's a slightly different world than when I started as a filmmaker. But, you know, I definitely think the best advice I'd have is just to like go tell stories that you feel no one else can tell. That's what I tried to do when I started. I was like, I need to go make shorts that no one else could make this short as well as I could make it, because that would be my only upper hand, because I don't have any of the technical skills better than any of these other filmmakers. I was wise enough to kind of see like they're going to have all of these upper hands. So what could I do differently? So, you know, my thing was to try to like figure out what you know better than anybody else and really kind of explore that. And you'll find what you do well and what you do badly through the process of doing that. So, you know, that's one thing I would tell them. And the other thing is like, you don't necessarily have to rush to Hollywood. I feel very grateful growing up in Canada, starting my career in Canada. It's a much kinder system in a lot of ways. You know, it was it's a nurturing system. There's not this kind of like you can be a superstar overnight kind of sensation in Canada so much. So it's a slower road. And I couldn't really make the types of films I make in Canada. So I had no choice. And I kind of fell into this a little bit. But I felt so lucky that I wasn't, you know, like 19 and ran off to Hollywood to become a filmmaker, because it's really hard. And it's the level that you're playing at out here is like there's really talented people. And you know, starting off, it's going to be hard to compete with those guys. You know, the more you can kind of do on your own, not necessarily in private, but like the more you can kind of do in order to build your chops up before you come out and take that swing, because it's a big swing, you know, to mm-hmm. come out to Hollywood and try to do a movie out here that's a massive, like, I use sports analogies because it's so easy, but it's like, you just got drafted, you're stepping up to the plate and they expect a home run.
Right.
Like, that's it.
Sure. Yeah.
And anything less is like a failure.
Oh, congratulations. You got a single. Get out. You know, like there's no, that's not the conversation. That's just right. not in the cards. That's not reality. You know, like that's not the reality I know. And especially if you're like, I want to prove that I can be a great filmmaker. You're certainly not looking for any kind of excuse to get a single.
Right.
You know, like, oh, no, that didn't really work out. Like, but I got on base, right? You're like, no. You're like, I want to be the guy who hits home runs. The more you can kind of hit singles and doubles and triples and do that and not feel the pressure of getting up the plate and hitting a home run, I would advise it because I age rapidly, you know, doing my first two movies. So, sure. like, I would, you know, say play. And, you know, the other thing, too, is that I regret not having more fun with my friends making films when I was younger. I thought about that the other day. Hmm. I thought about, like, you know,
you were really serious about everything.
I was too serious. Yeah. I kind of had to be. But, like, I didn't have the period where – I have friends who had the period where, like, they have, like, 20, you know, like, it was VHS tapes of movies they made with their friends. You know, and, like, I didn't have that. You know, I kind of was like, oh my God, I need to like, this has got to count.
You know? Everything is important. Right.
Everything's super important because that's just the situation I was in. And so I do look back now and think about my younger self at like short film festivals. And you know, I was really lucky, like the stuff I made did well. And so I would get invited to be on panels and I was like, whoa, holy crap, I'm on a panel. You know, like what the hell is happening? This is amazing. But I never got I got all of that joy, but I never really got the joy of like, oh, I'm hanging out with my friends making a movie. Mm-hmm. Isn't this cool? I just kind of like became serious about the steps right away.
Right. You know? Well, now you're friends with The Rock, so it all worked out.
That's true.
So before we jump into our unpaid endorsement segment, I just want, can you just give us the quick pitch on Frontier, just because I want to make sure we're servicing
what it's about?
Your PR company. No, like why you should watch it.
Oh, I think the number one reason why you should watch Frontier is that if you love Jason Momoa, we're the only game in town unless you have Batman in your movie with you. Jason occupies the character, mm-hmm. like in a way that I've rarely ever seen. Like this character he plays, Declan Harp, who's half Native, half European, which is embedded in that time period in a kind of like a touchy way,
right,
but like, in a good way, like
it's subversive and controversial, mm-hmm.
yeah,
but
it's
interesting.
It's potentially controversial, but we don't really like, we're very respectful.
It was a matter of fact back then.
It is. It's just these things happen. And so his character, like he had guys go and like find the material to build his clothes in like old mining shafts in New Mexico. Like he handmade all his knives from like knife makers. Like he gave me one that's a replica of his grandfather's knife from World War II, I think. And like that was my rap gift from Jason. He was like, this is my grandfather gave me this knife. It's from a handmade knife that he had made in Europe during World War II. And that was like my rap gift from him. Like this dude is into this. And when you're 6'4", 270-pound, half Hawaiian beast, and on top of that, you're like blossoming into a movie star,
sure, yeah.
and you love your character. What he does with that character is what he's waited his entire life to do. He's just like, no, I'm going to do this. This is the way that you need to do this. So for me, the most exciting thing besides, and for like, you know, I was like, oh, visually, we haven't seen this time period and it's raw mm-hmm. and it's cool. Like that was the thing that dragged me into like doing it and, you know, wanting to do it. But then when Jason came on and seeing what he was doing, I was like, this is bananas. This guy is like all in, like 100%. So, even if you don't care, and by the way, I don't love, you know, period pieces. Like I didn't make it 'cause I'm like, oh, I love British period pieces. I'm like the opposite of that. I'm like, how the hell am I going to stay awake? You know, what do I do with this material that makes me excited to watch it? Like if I'm that dude sitting in the middle of nowhere and like I'm flicking through Netflix and I'm like, so I was like, all right, well, I would make it super paced up. I would make it really aggressive. I'd make it as raw as I can make it. You know, I'd give it love stories and make it sensual and give it a soft side, which you never see. You know, like I would do all these things because I want everyone to watch what I make. And so I try to do all that. And like, you know, one of the big things was like strong females and all that. But then on top of that, we get Jason pre-Aquaman, pre-Justice League, all that stuff.
Right.
And
post Game of Thrones.
post Game of Thrones, but long post. Like he just, right. It wasn't like season two of Game of Thrones was out. Like it was season five or something.
Right. He was right. Long dead.
Yeah, he's long. I mean, he's like, he's super, he loves Khal Drogo and like he's like, that opportunity was massive for him and he loved it. But it wasn't like, oh, we've got the guy from Game of Thrones. Like it wasn't, there wasn't sure. heat on Jason. You know, like we went and lobbied and said, this is the guy. And it obviously helped that it had been announced that he was going to be Aquaman, but there was no, there wasn't an image of him. Mm-hmm. There was none of that stuff. So we just kind of were like meeting him and like I went up to his house in Topanga and he taught me how to shoot bows and arrows and throw hatchets and like.
Did you guys eat any horse hearts?
We didn't eat horse hearts. We ate a gigantic platter of meat, though.
Sure, sure.
Like
he's like, would you like an appetizer?
Jason Momoa afternoon for you is what we're saying.
Yeah. It is the most Jason Momoa afternoon of my life.
Did you brush his hair?
No. He would have like snapped my arm. No, you know, like he is like, you know, he just, we drank Guinness until I couldn't stand up because he's a gigantic human being. And like, he was just like, want to throw a tomahawk? I'm like, sure. He's like, you know, like he'll just bust out, you know, you've seen.
He's like, it's like Tom Cruise, you know, he's like just snowboards and rides motorcycles and yeah. flies planes.
Momoa front. Throws tomahawks yeah, and like sure. eats big plots of meat and like, you know, he's like, I want to see my wolves. And he's like, he has wolves.
Right.
You're like, this well, guy like, is.
Why else would you like, live
they're
in Topanga?
They're the only ones that, right. That are challenged for me in wrestling.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, for me, beyond all the cool shit that I tried to bring to the show, it was what Jason brought to the show. And so now you get to see kind of an unfiltered Momoa like bringing his heart and soul to it. And like what we're shooting in season three is super, super rad because he's really driving an element into the show that he really wants. And we're like going, we're sending a unit to go to Scotland to shoot mm-hmm. castles. And like, it's the show is getting bigger. And a lot of that is like, Jason's like, I know where my character has to go. And we have like an overarching thing for the show and what we need the show to do and how he fits into that has been consistent from the beginning. But he's evolving with his character and he's so into his character that I couldn't have ever predicted it would be this cool and that he would be this legit. That he, like, I honestly, and I've watched, when I go to work with someone, I watch all their stuff. Mm-hmm. And I honestly think that him as Declan Harp is his best acting. Like, and I've watched a lot of his stuff and what he brings to the table, the vulnerability he's willing to show. Mm-hmm. And that's not like us going, no, Jason, like women need to see you vulnerable. Like he's like, this is about my wife and child being killed. And this person is like done this to my father. And like, he shows up, we show him, takes him like, Jason, that's raw. And he's like, one more, you know? And then he goes out there and then it's like, he guts himself and leaves it all out there. And you're like, okay, that's phenomenal. You know, like, that's just a guy who's really in love with his character, really down for doing the best thing for the show. And I can't say enough about that. And you're not going to get that anywhere else from him. This is like his thing.
That's awesome. And so do you have to watch the first season or to like, do you have to watch everything in order? Like start season one, episode one? Is that what you recommend?
I would. I mean, what I think the thing with season one is the first couple episodes, you need to have patience with it because it sort of has to set up a lot.
Right. We like Game of Thrones. Like no one would watch that off the first episode.
Right. Yeah. So I think you could jump into season two if you wanted to, but you wouldn't know like, oh, who is this girl that he's chasing for? Like mm-hmm. you'd right. learn in the first episode, like, oh, they're in love. But if you watch season one, you see why they're in love. You know what I mean? So I would watch it through.
Just binge it, guys.
Yeah.
Just
well, the funny thing is it's six right? episodes and sure. people watch it in like a day or two. Yeah.
So, and there they're 1 hour, right?
Yeah. Like 45 minutes or 50 minutes or whatever. So it's like, yeah, I'm not asking much, guys. We have 12 episodes. You can just watch them
it's
all.
Like one night. It's a work day. It's not that big a
that's
deal.
That's right. It's not a full weekend commitment.
Well, awesome. Well, so we're going to jump into our unpaid endorsements.
Endorsements.
So my endorsement is a video that I've watched twice in a row. It's called I'm Going to Teach You How to Make Lasagna. And it's just a rap video about this guy who teaches you how to make lasagna.
This gets you stoked, creatively stoked.
No, it's just a thing I like. I take it back. I think, not to wax philosophical about it, but it is kind of the first video I've seen in a while on the internet that's just full-on stupid, uh-huh. and I really miss that.
Yeah.
You know, we talked about that in a previous episode, but like so much of my feeds now are like, political and important, and like it's just so much to deal with that, like, just a stupid video about a guy literally telling you how to make lasagna, and it's like a pretty decent seeming recipe. He really goes through each beat.
Good. It's, I think, like, this is stupid. I'm smelling win-win.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
What I mean? Like, yeah. I don't see the downside.
Hey, man. Yeah. That's why I'm endorsing.
That's a solid one.
Okay, well, I guess, is it bad if I endorse the YouTube video I saw today,
no,
too?
Man.
It's a really old one. It's a music video, kind of. It's from Flight of the Conchords. Jenny, have you guys ever seen that?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Wait, which one's Jenny?
It's just, like, they're singing, like, they're meeting on a park bench,
yeah.
And, like, one of them is named Jenny, and the other, you know, and they're talking about their relationship, but we find out that they don't, one of them doesn't quite remember what their relation, like meeting them or anything. I don't know, just look for Flight of the Conchords, Jenny. It's like really amazing dialogue that is really fun. I also, like, actually something, a problem I've been having is it's the holidays right now, and I've been having like a horrible time figuring out like what to buy for my parents. Now in today's age of Amazon, like anytime anyone needs anything, they just like buy it instantly, right? It's like, well, oh, I need like a phone holder for my bike. Look at that up on Amazon, and I just buy it. So like no one needs anything,
right?
You know?
Yeah. So, I like not needing anything though.
Yeah, but then when you have to give a gift, or someone asks you like what they should give you as a gift.
That's what producing partners are for, my friend. They just have the best ideas because all they want to do is buy shit.
Oh, so, well, so somebody, our writer's assistant in our writer's room, she recommended going to the Mocha design store.
Oh,
it's,
yeah,
like cool,
that's a good idea.
Cool art, like little things. You can get,
like,
something for $10 or $100
at the Glen, at the, what's it called,
the Grove.
I'm just like, can't go wrong, because whatever subject you choose, that's
sure.
going to be the best book about it.
Yeah, that's true. That's a solid,
that's a
endorsement
good one,
right there. Yeah,
that came up today.
So Taschen, Taschen, in case you guys are looking for it.
There's another arts and architecture store in Santa Fe 1 downtown. Do you know what it used to be over?
I don't leave my house, man.
right, for sure.
I go to work and then I go to bed. And I stop by and talk to you guys.
Yeah,
that's it.
There you go. Wow, thanks, man.
Also, that's all I do.
Do you want that to be your endorsement?
Taschen's a good one. I don't really, I'm still trying to wrap my head around what I'm endorsing. Is this a...
Oh, just something that you like.
Just something that I dig? Like, it doesn't have anything to do with work at all?
It doesn't have to.
I'm going to endorse the Toronto Raptors, the best basketball team in the universe.
Oh, yeah. Why are they...
Why are they the
best?
Because
like
they're
them.
Canadian like me. And they,
boy, your eyes really lit up.
They're
you are,
amazing.
You are serious
so,
about this
listen,
endorsement.
Listen, this is a serious thing. So for me, you know, I work a lot.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't want to work all the time. And I love basketball. I played basketball as a kid. And I spend so much time just like thinking and drawing and being creative. And so for me, watching the Raptors is like, I don't have to do any of that. You know, like I need to, like, I have a super hard time turning it off. So this is just kind of like, and I don't like sports. Like, I don't watch football. I would rather like punch myself in the face than like play golf. You know, like I can't do, I've tried, you know, no disrespect to golf, but I'm not built.
I play pinball. Same reason. Just
there,
like
you
can't think about anything else but like the stupid silver ball.
Yeah, and I used to be like Tetris. I was like the Tetris whiz, you know? Like, it's just a simple turn it off, not for long. Like, you know, I love video games and stuff, but now if they're so good, you get addicted so quickly.
Sure.
So, specifically the Raptors, because I lived in Toronto when they formed.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I've grown up with all their jerseys and all the purple dinosaur, all the crappy stuff that they've now is like cool and retro and whatever.
Sure.
And now that I'm like, I'm going to do quotations because this sounds dorky, but a big Hollywood filmmaker, I can get courtside seats through Warner Brothers.
Mm-hmm.
No one cares about the Raptors in Hollywood besides me. So I bring all my friends. My composer knows the assistant coach. So I get to meet. I get to go to their shoot-arounds. I'm the only civilian in the shoot-around in L.A. So I get to sit there and watch my favorite team shoot around, meet my favorite players. I've gotten game-worn sneakers signed by them, game-worn jerseys signed by them. I'm like, you need to find the thing that like turns your brain off where you're like, this, I'm just stoked on this. It has nothing to do with anything else I'm doing. So Toronto Raptors.
But I think the more applicable endorsement here is to find some team or something that no one else really cares for. So that when
in
you
LA.
Become a big Hollywood filmmaker.
They used to be the LA Kings. All my Canadian friends were like, sure. Oh my God, yeah. No one cares about the Kings. They win the Stanley Cup and everyone here is like, whatever.
People like the Kings.
Yeah.
So football teams don't do so well here.
That's true. Well, we have about 40 of them now. Yeah. It's hard to pick.
Well, cool. So obviously a lot of your work is studio work, which your publicist is here with us. So they help you a lot with the publicity. But do you have like a website or a Twitter feed?
Where can people find out more about you?
I have Instagram.
Hey, there you go. What's your handle on Instagram?
Peytonology.
Oh, we should take a picture.
Yeah. Yeah.
Peytonology.
Yeah.
P-E-Y-T-O-N.
Ology. Like O-L-O-G-Y. Biology. It's the scientific study of me.
Nice. Peytonology.
Cool. Well, you'll be able to see a photo where we'll tag you on the Just Shoot It Pod Instagram. And you can follow us on Twitter at Just Shoot It Pod. Check out the show notes on justshootitpod.com and follow me at Mr. Madenlow.
And me at Smitey Pileg and the show at Just Shoot It. And this episode was edited by Christopher Robert Gray. And the music was provided by the Free Music Archive and the artist Jazar. Please leave us a rating on iTunes. Let us know what you think of the show. Thanks a lot, guys. We'll catch you next time.
Thanks, guys. Bye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.